And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to Radio Free Asgard. This is episode number 181, coming at you, as we always do, from beautiful Chicago, Illinois, where we are covered with snow at the moment. Yes, it's almost as though the casket of ancient winters was unleashed right above the city. Yeah, like the rest of the Midwest, we really kind of got socked in by a lot of snow over this past weekend. Now, they're saying 18 inches of snow, but I'm seeing drifts of 18 inches of snow, so yeah, I don't think it was quite that much. I'm thinking we got more like about 10 inches of snow around here, and maybe a little bit more than that downtown where I work. It seemed like the snow was just a bit deeper down there, but here it was a little bit lighter. But anyway, still kind of a pain in the ass to get to and fro. But yeah, what about that? Anyways, I'm sure everybody's been talking about snow this past week, so you know, why should we be any different? So getting off the topic of snow, we actually have an email to cover, and this email comes to us from Gene, the podcasting machine Hendrix, and he had this to say about last episode. Tom, I don't think I've ever told you how much I appreciate your going through the Norse lore on your show. Not only do you do a great job in the readings, but you treat it with respect, and I want to thank you for that. Well, thank you very much, Gene. I really appreciate that. As for whether Agnar or Girod came off as better, as Ben Kenobi said, it all depends on your point of view. You see, in the Norse worldview, which I'm a bit familiar with, Girod was generous and a good host and a good king, regardless of his mood swings. He also had a son who everyone loved, guaranteeing his line would continue with another good king. Agnar, however, did nothing. He had no adventures that we know of, no men to lead, and no wealth to share. So to the Norse, Girod was more of the model for what to do. Well, except for torturing a potential guest without cause, but he paid for that. And that's from Gene. So thanks very much, Gene. I'd like to think that there is a story of Agnar. Though it's, you know, no doubt is one of these stories that has been lost. And the reason why I say that is because they mention him, you know, off, you know, copulating with a storm giantess or whatever. Now, I think that's a weird thing to just throw into a story. I mean, at that point, they could have just as easily have just completely written Agnar out of the picture. And I'm of the opinion that there are probably hundreds of stories that did not survive. And I'd like to think that Agnar is one of them. And, you know, and this would have been a oblique reference to one of those stories. You know, so that's why I think that I think it's more likely than not that there was something. But again, you know, we'll never know. I mean, you know, with the, you know, the coming of Christianity, and they're not preserving the oral traditions of the Vikings, you know, in a systematic way. I mean, you just basically just have Sturluson out there doing it. Yeah, it means that there's a lot of stuff that we'll never know, and I'm thinking that's probably one of them. Now, speaking of this, interestingly enough, right before I started recording the show, we had a post on the Facebook page. Now, incidentally, you can join our Facebook page. Just look for Radio Free Asgard over on Facebook, and you will find us. Our listener, Neil Stanifer, a friend of the show, posted a story on the page about Iceland to build the first temple to the Norse gods since the Viking Age. And it's not a very long story, so I'll just go ahead and read it out to you. Find this really, really, really exciting, actually. Icelanders will soon be able to publicly worship at a shrine to Thor, Odin, and Frigg, with construction starting this month on the island's first major temple to the Norse gods since the Viking Age. I'm kind of glad they put that qualifier in there, because I bet there's a lot of smaller temples. Worship of the gods in Scandinavia gave way to Christianity about 1,000 years ago, but a modern version of Norse paganism has been gaining popularity in Iceland. I don't believe anybody believes in a one-eyed man who is riding about on a horse with 8 feet, said Hilmar Urn Hilmarsson, high priest of Asatruarfigildi. Let's try this and try to get it right. Asatruarfélagið. an association that promotes faith in the Norse gods. We see the stories as poetic metaphors and a manifestation of the forces of nature and human psychology. Membership in the Asuatrar Felagið has tripled in Iceland in the last decade to 2,400 members last year, out of a total population of 330,000, the data from Statistics Iceland showed. The temple will be circular and will be dug 4 meters, 13 feet, down into a hill overlooking the Icelandic capital Reykjavik, with a dome on top to let in the sunlight. The sun changes with the seasons, so we are in a way having the sun paint the space for us, Helmerson said. The temple will host ceremonies such as weddings and funerals. The group will also confer names to children and initiate teenagers, similar to other religious communities. Iceland's neo-pagans still celebrate the ancient sacrificial ritual of blot with music, reading, eating, and drinking, but nowadays leave out the slaughter of animals. So really, really interesting stuff there. Now, I love this idea, and you know, and I am actually planning a trip to Iceland this year. Whether it's going to happen, I'm still not absolutely sure. It's going to depend on a lot of factors that are beyond my control. If it's done by then, I would love to go see that. Ought to be really, really cool. Is it really a blot if you don't have blood? I'm just saying, you know. I mean, if I were Asatru in any kind of real way, I would kind of be a fundamentalist probably. It's like, and that's me being a vegetarian. But anyway, so really, really interesting stuff there. I'm glad to see that something of this nature is finally happening, and hopefully it'll catch on, and maybe it'll catch on here too. Wouldn't that be something? Anyway, yeah, I'm really waiting for that. Neil actually commented on this, saying that he can imagine Odin reading this, lifting his eye patch as he says, "Wait, metaphors for life, not worship of? Somebody get me my spear." So that could be. That could very well happen. All right, so we do actually have an issue of Thor, God of Thunder, to cover, so let's go ahead and move along to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
Indeed, and this week we are covering Thor, God of Thunder, number 22. Cover date is July of 2014, retailed for $3.99. On the cover, we see Thor and Roz Solomon facing off against none other than the troll Ulik. And he's got his crusher bumper things on his fists, and Ulik, that is. And he's advancing, looks like, towards Solomon. And Thor is coming after. And I should point out that this scene appears nowhere in the book. And we have the credits, of course. Jason Aaron was the writer. Esad Rebic was the artist. Ives Svartzina is the color artist. VC's Joe Sabino is the letterer. Ji Hyung is the cover artist. John Moisan is the assistant editor. Will Moss is the editor. Axel Alonso, editor-in-chief. Joe Quesada, chief creative officer. Dan Buckley, publisher. And Alan Fine, executive producer. Once again, we get a roster here on the front page, and I'll just go ahead and read that as I've been continuing to do. And we have King Thor. In the far future, King Thor is the sole champion of a near-dead Earth, for as he refers to it, Midgard. His granddaughters, Frigg, Elisiv, and Atli, don't understand why he still cares for the planet. He alone remembers the past, when Earth was alive, and when its champions were plentiful, including Roz Solomon, part of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s environmental action team. Agent Solomon recently destroyed several of the environmentally harmful Roxxon Energy Corp's factories with the assistance of Thor. Back from an Avengers mission in space, Thor found that Roxxon had replaced the factories that he and Roz destroyed with new ones that float above his beloved Broxton, Oklahoma, turning it into a polluted husk of a town. An enraged Thor took his fight directly to the man responsible, Roxxon CEO Dario Agger, the Minotaur. But Agger didn't need to change into his Minotaur form to deal with the angry Thunder God. He simply sued him. Agger's lawyer served Thor with a restraining order that prohibits him from coming near any Roxxon facility, which now includes Broxton. To cover his bases, Agger also hired Ulik the Troll to make further trouble for Thor. Basically, Agar seems all too fine with the fact that Roxxon's continued pollution will one day result in a ruined planet Earth, leaving it vulnerable many millennia from now to an attack from Old Galactus. In the far future, Galactus has come to feed on the barren Earth. Even faced with King Thor, Galactus is unwilling to give up his prize, and the two engage in a world-shattering brawl. After knocking a battered King Thor deep into space, it now appears as though the Devourer of Worlds can finally bring about The Last Days of Midgard, Part 4 of 5, for Thor so loved the world. And we open up in the story. Oh, there's an ad for Dr. Pepper with a Rocket Raccoon. The far future, the death throes of Midgard. As its insides spill out across the cosmos, the Earth begins to reek of rot and decay, of ruin. Yet Galactus savors every fetid morsel, as if these dead, gutted remains could not possibly taste any more delicious. And we see that Galactus's machines are kind of tearing the Earth apart. And all of a sudden, we have a whooshing down of person. And Galactus knows, of course, who it is.
Oh, back for more already, God of Thunder? Now that I have feasted, you will find there is not a man alive who may stand before my might.
And we get a full-page spread here of the people responding to it. And it is, of course, the Women of Thunder. Frigg, Atli, and Elisiv. And now Frigg, being the, she's like the dominant one. She actually is carrying a hammer, and sharp-eyed viewers will realize that this is very much Stormbreaker, Beta Ray Bill's hammer. It's exactly the same. Maybe it's not, but, maybe they'll say so during the story. I have a problem with this page. We're going to talk about it a little bit later.
Then it's a good thing we aren't men, says Elisiv. Girls of Thunder, take him down!
Hell yes!
They all go after Galactus, and Galactus is like, Girls of Thunder?
Where's our grandfather? What have you done to him?
Speak quickly, giant, before I lop off your tongue and make a bed of it for my goat!
I should mention the two of them are riding goats. They're hammering on Galactus's helmet. He's kind of drawing back, and they're going krakoom boom. And
you seek Thor? Very well, little ones. I will see that you join him, wherever it is that he is dying.
And we then shift scenes to the present day over Broxton, Oklahoma. And we have Roz Solomon flying around in her shield mobile. And we see the floating factories, and they're floating and making lots of pollution. And, and below we see the town is just kind of hazy and not much going on.
Day 19 of the Siege of Broxton, and we're still no closer to stopping Roxxon's assault. If we can't beat them here, then something tells me that given just a bit more time, this is how the whole world will look. God help us.
I thought we agreed to leave the gods out of this, Agent Solomon. After all, it was a bit of divine intervention that got us into this mess in the first place.
It wasn't all Thor's fault, Coulson. It was mine, too.
I'm quite sure I have no idea what you're talking about, especially as it relates to the illegal, but no doubt thoroughly therapeutic, destruction of Roxxon property.
Coulson?
It's a new age, Roz. Old Nick Fury got Nazi wackos and commie spies with cute little decoder rings. You get zillionaire CEOs and their corrupt global multi-super corporations. Different enemies, but the price of failure is still the same. The end of all life as we know it. Welcome to S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Solomon.
And we see Agent Solomon's flying car kind of coming in for a landing in Broxton.
You suck at pep talks, Coulson.
Yeah, well, I'm even worse when it comes to firing people. Tell me you're making progress. Director Hill would really like to see some progress.
I wish I could, but if I'm being completely honest, things have only gotten worse. As if flying pollutant-spewing factories weren't enough, now we've got unexplained sinkholes.
And, you see, kind of on the edge of one of these, and big old sinkhole.
Massive sinkholes, opening all around town. It's a miracle no one's died yet. I've got the rest of my team stretched thin, working to evacuate the entire area. We've still got no idea of what's causing them or why they...
And she looks down and she sees a cloaked figure standing on the roof of one of the houses. Some guy wearing a green cloak. No doubt one of Dr. Doom's discarded cloaks, because that's exactly that design.
Coulson, I'm going to have to call you back.
And of course it is Thor. And Roz confronts him.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
Trying to think of a reason not to smash those monstrosities out of the sky, says Thor.
I can give you a number of reasons, starting with the fact that you're defying a court order just by being here.
The gods have never been bound by the laws of man.
See, I did say something about that last time.
That's because the gods have never faced a legal team like Roxxon's. This is no joke, Thor. They want you to defy them. They're daring you to. But that will only make things worse for Broxton. And look around. Things are pretty bad already.
We cannot let these people down, Agent Solomon. They put their trust in Asgard. They put their faith in me.
Hey, the fight's not over. And before it is, believe me, we'll need you. But right now I need you to put your faith in me.
And they have a little moment here.
That, Rosalind Solomon, I did the moment I met you.
And Thor goes sailing away. And he goes flying away, and Roz is like,
totally could have kissed me there, Thunder God. Totally.
And sometime later, we have her descending into one of these sinkholes, and she's in her car, obviously.
This is Agent Solomon now descending into sinkhole 7. This appears to be the deepest one, so maybe I can get an idea of what's causing...
And she's down in there pretty far, and there's a rumbling and rocks tumbling down, and one of them smashes her car with a crash. And she's crawling out of the wreckage, and she's okay.
There goes another car. Coulson's gonna kill me.
Not likely,
says a voice, and she turns around, and there are trolls.
Not unless he hurries.
Oh my god, you're... What the hell are you?
Trolls. And what are you?
Agent Solomon of S.H.I.E.L.D. And you're all under arrest.
Yes, I'm sure we are. Eat her if you like. Just be quick about it. Save me the thigh.
And she has in her belt a machine that actually creates weapons. So interesting that. You'd think that she would have created weapons before she went into this hole. Anyway, there's the trolls are encroaching on her.
Belt, maximum caliber.
Printing now.
Print faster.
And she gets a bing. And she pulls the weapon off of her belt and starts shooting trolls. Blat, 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 blat. Blam, blam, blam. And we shift scenes. And we have an ad here for Entertainment Earth. So we have Zombie Magneto and Dragon Mama and Stylized Spidey Bobblehead and Godzilla and Rocket and Groot. And yeah, okay. Anyway, we shift scenes to the far future where the Thunder Gals are attacking Galactus still. He's shooting beams out of his knuckles. It looks almost like he's wearing the Infinity Gauntlet. I don't think it's supposed to be, but anyway. And the gals are attacking Galactus. Elisiv Wodendaughter wields the weapons of her great uncles, Fandral and Hogun, like a warrior born. Okay, so she has a mace and a sword. They're attacking Galactus's head. He's like, Grrrg! Frigg feels the lightning coursing through her and wonders how she lived this long without a hammer like Stormbreaker by her side. So yeah, see, I was right. This is Beta Ray Bill's hammer. So apparently Beta Ray Bill doesn't live 10,000 years into the future. And the three of them are just whacking Galactus in the face, and they're like smashing him in the mouth, kind of chopping at his mouth, I guess, and he doesn't seem real happy about this. Atli and the great axe Yarnbjorn are a match made in Valhalla. And of course, Yarnbjorn, that's Thor's axe from before he had the hammer, if you think back to young Thor. So they're all carrying these venerable old weapons. Galactus is not amused, according to the caption here.
Enough! You are insects before the might of the World Eater. Fly back to Asgard, little god bugs, before I squash you all.
He smashes Atli, and she goes falling down. I'm sure she's fine.
Atli! Careful, Galactus!
And she whips Stormbreaker, Frigg that is, whips Stormbreaker right into Galactus's mouth and like smashes off his lower jaw. That's what it looks like anyway. And she's like, even the tiniest bug can cause a giant to choke. And he's going, or bleed. And she summons Stormbreaker back, which really just kind of destroys the lower half of Galactus's face with a hurrg. And Atli is okay, and she's picking up her axe off the ground and says,
enough playing! Let's kill the bastard already!
Many have tried, little ones, including your fool of a grandfather. Their withered bones litter this cosmos from one end to another, while Galactus burns like a billion suns, and his hand with what looks like the Infinity Gauntlet on it, which I don't think it is, it explodes. There's this giant, like, nuclear explosion, which we see from very, very far away. And it's like, whoo, and yeah, big, huge explosion. And then we cut to many light years away, it says, and to old man Thor. And he wakes up and he's like, oh, where the Galactus? And he summons Mjolnir to himself. And the caption says, even from half a cosmos away, King Thor can feel the earth, can hear its screams, can sense that the great Galactus has won. And yet he flies with great haste in the opposite direction. Oh, my. We then shift scenes back to Earth, back to Broxton. And we have a scene here at Bill's Diner. We have, what's his name, D'Agger and his cronies, and they're meeting in the diner here.
Another sinkhole opened up, swallowed half of Carol Street.
Maybe it's time we all left after all. And let Roxanne run us off our damn land. I'd sooner let the ground eat me.
Look at this. Genuine Midwestern anachronisms, says D'Agger. I'm going to miss them when they're gone. Perhaps we could put some in a zoo.
Turn right around, Roxanne, man, says the waitress. You wait.
Speaking of being gone, I advise you all to vacate the premises with due haste. This building is scheduled for demolition. We're building a Roxy Burger in its place. You're going to love it. Anyone who's lost their jobs or their home or a member of their immediate family gets a coupon for a free side of curly fries. With a purchase of equal or greater value, of course.
Go to hell, Agger. You and your whole damn operation.
You mean you don't want free French fries? Why, that's simply un-American. It would seem you people are even more ignorant than your precious god of... And as he says that, there's a burst of thunder. Crackoom! And he's like, then again, maybe not. And Thor is standing outside the diner, and D'Agger and his guys just kind of walk outside. You're making this almost too easy, Thor. You could have at least brought Daredevil with you as legal counsel. Of course, you'd still have been rather grossly outnumbered lawyer-wise.
You have your lawyers, Dario Agger. I have a hammer. Shall we see which one hits hardest?
You don't sound like a god who's come before me to beg. I suppose that means this little lesson of ours must continue.
If it will end these good people's suffering, then I, Thor, will beg this day. The safety of Broxton and its citizens means more to me than my pride ever could. Just tell the great lord of Roxxon how much begging will it take to make you feel like a man.
I wouldn't know, God of Thunder. You see, it's been a very long time since I felt like anything quite so simple as a man. And he has his phone out and he goes, boop, and he's talking to somebody. Anytime you're ready down there.
Sinkhole! Everybody run!
And there's a rumbling, and yeah, it was like,
Mr. Agger, sir, perhaps we should...
Move one muscle and your whole family will be on the street by morning.
What in hell? No, stay back.
And there's a giant kirk, kirk. And a big arm comes up out of the ground. A kind of troll-looking arm. Oh, dear. It appears my lawyers are being rather brutally murdered. How terribly shocking. And they're all like, rargh!
No, Agger, what foul deviltry is this?
Never mind them, God of Thunder. Please do continue. I believe you were about to start begging. And we see that D'Agger has transformed into his Minotaur form. and behind him is looming the trolls. And we shift scenes again. Back to the far future and King Thor. And he has come to the edge of space, and there's this giant glob of dark gook kind of floating here in space, and he's hovering in front of it. He's like, "Damn my eye." And the caption says, "He finds it right where he expects to, on the dark edges of space, past where even the star sharks dare swim. And yet, it is not quite as he remembers it. This was a mere black hole when last he saw it, on the day he hurled something unspeakable into its bottomless black depths, something he'd hoped to never see again. Something he now comes seeking." And we kind of recognize what's going on here. I just, we'll let it be a surprise, though. And old man Thor dives into this giant ball o' black gook. And we get a full page last panel here of the story. "All black, the Necro Sword. The blade that slew a billion gods. The black weapon of Gore the God Butcher. The last hope for planet Earth." And we have old man Thor, and he's crawling through the birth canal of this thing, which is exactly what it looks like. And he sees the hilt of the sword, and he's going to grab it. And that is to be continued. And we have a few comments, of course, as we always do. But before we do that, we are going to, as usual, have a message for one of our friends.
The Fantasticast is your guide to the Fantastic Four from the beginning of the Marvel Age of Comics in 1961 onwards.
Each week, Steve Lacy and Andy Leyland cover every issue, spin-off, guest appearance and cameo, and more.
And in 2015, we begin our journey through the decade that tastes forgot, the 1970s.
Join us as we take a look at
the departure of Jack Kirby and Stan Lee,
the Kree-Skrull War,
the arrival of Marvel Team-Up,
Bill Murray as the Human Torch,
creators including Roy Thomas, George Perez, Marv Wolfman, Jerry Conway, Rich Buckler and John Byrne,
and of course, Marvel 2-in-1.
All this and more at ffcast.libsyn.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
The Fantastic Cast.
Insert catchy tagline here. Wait, what?
And we're back. And of course, another really solid issue here from Jason Aaron. Actually, you know, after the kind of the boredom that we had with this Gore the God Butcher story and some of the stuff that followed, this is really holding my interest in a real big way. I have one kind of complaint about it, because it seems as though thematically we're coming full circle, and that's great. I really like this idea of Thor. He's going to go grab Gore the God Butcher's weapon, and he's going to go, presumably, go kill Galactus with it. I guess that's what's going on here. And it'll be interesting to see what happens here. Artwork by Esad Rebic, very, very good. Just clean. It's concise. Some of the artwork is a little bit off, and I'm going to talk about one of those in a sec. But all of the Broxton stuff, really murky. And I realize that Broxton is supposed to be really polluted and all that, but it almost seems as though Rebic is trying not to draw any backgrounds. And throughout the issue, we really have almost no backgrounds, period. Not in the space scenes, not in the scenes where he's fighting Galactus, not in the Broxton scenes. It just seems like all of the effort is being put into the characters and the actions going on in the foreground, and really no background art almost at all. So it's interesting. What we have, though, is brilliant. One exception to that, and that is our first full-page spread here of the Girls of Thunder. We have Frigg and Atli and Elisiv, and they're attacking Galactus, and we have Atli and Elisiv on their goats, which I presume are Thor's goats, though I could be wrong about that. And I like everything about this page except for the character of Frigg. Frigg is badly misshapen, and I don't know what is supposed to be going on here, the art, but her legs are like three sizes too small for the rest of her body. Her head from forehead to her chin is about half as long as her leg. So it really is kind of a, I don't know. I wouldn't call it sloppy, but I don't like this image. I don't like this particular page. It's like she's supposed to be some weird kind of centaur or something. It's the one place that is not, an absolutely beautiful piece of work. And so it stands out all the more by that. Notice on this page, we have Ella Sieve, and she's carrying Hogan's mace and Fandral's sword. And that's something I missed the first time around, but yeah, that is indeed the case. And, of course, we have Frigg wielding Stormbreaker. So that's a nice bit of continuity there, and I have to say Stormbreaker looks really good. All right, and that's about it for this week. Thanks once again, folks, very much for listening. I suppose next issue we will see the showdown between the trolls and Thor, and that ought to be awesome. And hopefully it'll be a good time. Anyway, don't forget, we are going to be covering, kind of doing a retrospective of the Lee Kirby run if you want to participate. And we haven't had anything so far, so anybody who wants to participate now would be the time. If you could please submit your voice files, your emails, whatever, to radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And you can also email us there at any time for any reason, unless it's spam, in which case I'll just not read it out on the show. All right, and with that, we are back over the Rainbow Bridge, back to Midgard, if Galactus hasn't completely finished eating it yet. And we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard. You have been listening to Radio Free Asgard, a production of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all associated characters are mostly copyright Marvel Comics. The stories presented are done so for educational, review, and entertainment purposes only. No ownership is implied. The silly voices, however, well, they're all me. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, are copyright Mots Vent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll leave us a review on iTunes, tell your friends, or even join our Facebook group. We really love hearing from our listeners, and we appreciate all of your support. Thanks once again very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.